It's the Book of the Week.
Hello and welcome to episode 73 of Portsmouth Authors Collective Book Club on Radio Victory. Our guest author this week, Stephen Payne, was born in rural Devon in 1950s. Stephen Payne attended university in Liverpool, enjoying a career in teaching science, maths and geography, and another in financial services. Stephen is another PAC or PAC author with a thespian background and has appeared as the cricket bowler in Finding Neverland in 2004 and as a detective in Jonathan Creek's Christmas special, Satan's Chimney. Now living in Hampshire, he has two adult children and two grandchildren. Stephen keeps busy with hobbies ranging from fly fishing to painting with acrylics and watercolours. And Stephen also enjoys sailing and, of course, writing. Welcome to Victory, Stephen. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Your book, My Own Little Place, is your novel, your debut novel, I should say, and it's our book of the week, My Own Little Place, Adventures in the Quest to Find One's Place in Life. Now, I've got an order of questions for you, but that beckons a question, really. So, has it helped you find one's place in life writing the book?
It has. It did. It did help me a great deal in writing the book. And it was halfway through that I came up with the subtitle for the book, Adventures in the Quest, because I realised what I was doing.
Brilliant.
And since the book was published in February 2024, I found that I've been on another
quest.
Adventures in that quest continuing.
Brilliant.
So one thing leads to another.
Excellent.
And I didn't know that was going to happen.
I suppose, yeah. A story starts somewhere, goes somewhere else, and you, the writer, go with it.
And it keeps going.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to get the author to tell me a little bit about the book, a bit of blurb. Can you do that for me?
Sure. From the depths of despair, her adventures bring to life curious mysteries, rising the phoenix in Brona's life. A brainy young woman, she needs questions answered, like she needs gold dust. Finn's life is barren. Does he believe romance applies to him? No, he does not. Rich Celtic culture in Ireland and beyond has underlying secrets. We are lured in and want to know more. Weaving through the mazes and baffling laid-down codes unlocks the doors to secrets that will empower them. Hopefully, positively, but who knows? There is intrigue and menace out there. But what is the right place without a decent climate and environment? They cannot help but get involved in the fight to fix it, which draws them into adventures from the US Rockies to the East Coast. A car chase, grenades and bullets fly, as the agency world's conflicts of interest play out in London. Will the latest tech be enough to fulfil the quest? The ancient wisdoms from under our noses are sorely needed today.
Excellent. So your blurb mentions things like Southwark House, I think. Did you mention Celtic culture? We might have read it in there, but
yeah.
The American Rockies, certainly. What's the story actually about?
Okay, so the idea for the book came up originally from when I met someone who had been involved with the Southwark House situation. And in fact, their family lived at Southwark House in the Southwark estate for hundreds of years, maybe 400 or 500 years.
Right.
And that was the family home, Southwark House. And in the spring of 1944, the government came down to Southwark House and told the people, the family living there, that they were going to take over Southwark House to use it as the base headquarters for organising our D-Day landing forces.
Yeah, yeah.
And the family would have to move out and find somewhere else to live. So when I found out about that story from meeting that person, and I did research on it, and then I realised that actually, even though the family were well off, it was their own little place. That house was their own little place.
Of course,
and they'd had it taken away, they'd lost it.
Yeah.
And so they had to go elsewhere. And then that gave me the idea of the concept. Then I thought about other people that might lose their homes, and in fact, animals, birds, all have a place to live. Everyone has their own little place in life. And then I then moved that on from that to these two characters, Brona and Finn, and they have to set about adventures in their quest to find their place in life.
Brilliant. So, obviously, every book has a genre. What would you describe this one as?
Okay, so it's multi-genre. which means that there are the book, the storylines are all composed of an interwoven mix of historical fiction, mystical fiction, romance, thriller, and environmental issues.
Yeah, as you say, a mixture. Yeah. And obviously, every I love to ask this question because I get such a variation of answers from depending on who the author is and what their inspiration is. And that is the question, really. What's your inspiration to write this particular book?
Well, it's I'd never planned to write a book at all, ever. But when I came across this one particular day, when I came across this meeting this person and researching the situation, that then it suddenly exploded in me. Having discovered all that, I then I wrote some notes down on a pad of A4 paper, and then after perhaps a couple of weeks, I had to go put it on the computer, and then it just gradually gathered pace, you know, gathered moss, and it built into a book. So I then found that I could then explore in myself, in my mind, and my imagination, all these adventures and stories for these people.
I mean, I suppose you came from a bit of an academic background with being a teacher and stuff, so did that help you in your writing generally?
Yes, it did, yeah, particularly when it comes to the environment, because that was one of my subjects, geography and environmental studies and science. So that background did help with particularly the environmental, climate crisis and so on.
Sure, I suppose it's easy for all of us to have a story in our heads, but getting it onto paper, putting the words in the right order, the grammar in the right place and all that kind of thing, was that challenging or was that part of being an academic, I guess?
Well, you might think so, but of course I'd never done writing before, and I'd never written a great long tome of work before. I'd all been sort of, you know, short sort of pieces for lesson plans and this, that and the other. So actually, as I went on, as I wrote more and more, I realised that I needed to get on and do the story. But at the end, when I'd done the whole thing, I realised that I was not the best analyst of it. So I put it to a developmental editor, who, on coming back with a 66-page report...
Start again.
I realised that I had to take that seriously, and so I restructured as was suggested, restructured in a few places, left out a few bits, put in more of what they liked, and that came up. So my 80,000 word original, as a result of that process, became 88,000 words. So that was great. But then it had to then go to the copy edit stage. So it went through that whole process.
Did you take kindly to the critique?
Well, it was the original book was my baby, and I didn't want anybody to touch it.
Which is why I asked.
But I realised that because this was a professional, I had to take them seriously, and so I did. I did set about it, and I felt better afterwards. It felt great afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose
once I'd relaxed into it.
Yeah, without shadow of a doubt, a writer wants to write what's in their head, but also you want to sell books, so it has to be written in a way that not, you know, a person buys it and then goes on and recommends it to somebody else.
People who read sections of the book on the way through as I was developing it said they loved the writing style. And so
that's good.
Absolutely,
for you.
Yeah. And that was different as well to maybe a number of other books. But the fact that they said they loved the writing style, they just went over the top and saying about the writing style. So this is good. I'm liking this. That gave me encouragement to carry on writing and developing more in the same way that came naturally to me.
Sure, absolutely. So with every book comes a challenge. Did you come across, whilst researching or whilst...
Yeah, the challenges were about where I was going to go with the book, because I had to bear in mind that it was going to be for a particular age group of people, perhaps, or a particular type of people. So I had to visualise who my market was, what type of people were going to read this, and therefore, what would they like to see happening in their imagination in the book, what would they not like to see happening. So I just, that helped me decide what I had to definitely leave out and what I should explore to develop the storylines with imagination and make it interesting and fulfill those genres.
Sure.
Because I had in mind what the genres would be that I wanted to do, and that would be my clientele, my marketplace, really.
Yeah. Do you feel you fulfilled your ambition with that?
I do, yeah.
Excellent.
Okay. And people say so. In the reviews on Amazon, people are saying the same thing.
Excellent.
I want to see more.
Talking of reviews and readers, what would you hope your readers will take away from this after reading the book?
Well, bearing in mind the genres and bearing in mind the characters and the storylines, I think that people would go away with a new sense of purpose in their life. They would perhaps have a new sense of direction about where they were actually going in their life and what they wanted to do. And a new sense of fulfillment. What is actually fulfilling in their lives? Bearing in mind we've got all this environmental change going on, the climate crisis and so on, that's changed the perspectives of what people had, you know, years ago. It's all different now. So the fulfillment may be in living with that or getting improvement in that. And also a new sense of understanding of the many things that are going on in life that weren't previously aware of. And obviously a new sense of happiness and appreciation of the beauty and the complexity of life.
Okay, let me come back in there. So would you say that it's given you a different perspective on life, having written the book?
Yes, it has. If we take up this note about the people, the characters in there, and about the environment that they live in, one thing I can tell you that is, in the last few days of January, my son, who lives in California, sent me some photographs that he'd taken from his plane. He was piloting, and he was flying over the Hollywood area, and the Hollywood sign is in the photos. And I looked at these photos, and it was all brown, dry, parched land. And I said to him, when did you take those photos? When was that flight? And he said, this morning. And that was Friday the 3rd of January.
Wow.
And I said, oh, that looks like it's primed for fires. 4 days later, we know what happened on Tuesday the 7th. The whole lot went up in flames.
Goodness gracious, yeah.
And therefore, what's also interesting, Bob, is that my next novel comes out on the round about the 14th of February, I think. But a lot of the action in it, probably half the action in that book, is actually centred on Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Burbank area, Hollywood area of California.
And is that coincidental?
Well, it's got absolutely. I wrote the book went for editing and publishing in December. This has just happened.
Okay, I'm with you.
In the last week.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So there's no design there. It's just happened the way it has.
Stephen, everything comes to an end, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And what we do need to know is where people can get hold of your book. It's a very interesting book, and I'm sure our listener would like to know where they can buy it.
Okay. The book is available on Amazon. It's available on Chalkstream Books. It's available on 53 different audiobook platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, and Audible. And it's available as an ebook. And that will be the same plan of development for the second book coming out, which is My Own Little Place 2, The Show Must Go On.
Ah, I love it. What's next for you as an author?
My Own Little Place 3.
I knew you were going to say that. It had to be, didn't it? So you're going to be a serial writer.
Well, these three definitely. Maybe a fourth. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
So are you a disciplined writer? Do you sit down and say, right, today I'm going to write so many words?
I have a plan. I have a plan for the book. For example, in 2023, I got March of that year. I thought, I've got to work out whether I'm serious about this book or not. So I added up all the words and it came to 23,000. And then I Googled how many words you need for a first novel. 80,000. So then I Googled how many words was Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, J.K. Rowling? 80,000. So note to self, Stephen, you've got to do 80,000.
Yeah.
So between March and June that year, I did another 53,000 words.
Well done.
So that was 3 months, so I worked out how many I needed to do per day on average, and I did it. And I've had to do much the same thing for this one because it's been done in about a year.
Yeah, so the answer to that question is yes, you're a disciplined writer.
I think so.
Well done. A lot of writers aren't necessarily, and they admit it, that come in here talking and say, I'll get up in the morning, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to get another chapter done, and it's just not happening in the zone, and it's not happening. So they don't push it, they stop.
But I have to wait for ideas to happen.
Yeah, of course.
So there will be low time, not much happening. Then when you get a spur of information, you have to write it down and work with it frantically and get the most out of that idea that came up.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe in the wee hours of the morning, could be any time.
Absolutely.
Or night.
Yeah. I mean, any writer really needs to keep a notebook by them, but I suppose with a smartphone now, you can voice it into that.
I do. I'm a paper and pen man, Bob.
Yeah, well, we're of that era, aren't we? Okay, so you've asked for a song, Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones. This, especially for you, Stephen, is the Rolling Stones. And back with part two of Portsmouth Authors Collective with myself and now Laurie Westron. Laurie, how are you?
Morning, Bob. I'm good.
How are you doing?
I'm a little bit chilly this morning.
Yes.
I'm all bundled up.
Yeah,
but no, I'm well, thank you.
Good. You did a good job last week with Tom Fisher.
You've got big shoes to fill.
Oh, come on. You've got all the knowledge, and it works well. I think it worked really well with Tom. That's good.
Oh.
I was talking with Stephen earlier. It was a great interview. Had a lot to say.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about using a developmental editor. Now, there's various types of editors. Pros and cons of each of them. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
I mean, you're editing a book at the moment, aren't you?
I am. I'm beta reading a book for Christine Lawrence.
Oh, wow.
Her next
serial writer.
Absolutely. I mean, she's really good at getting those words down on paper. And so, yeah, she asked me to beta read for her. But I've kind of also got my editor's hat on. And because I do some editing as well, so I'm kind of doing a little bit of both, which, you know, they're two different jobs, but I'm trying to, you know, approach them with different eyes.
Yeah. Do you enjoy editing other people's work?
I do. You know, I mean, I enjoy helping people to develop their work into, you know, something stronger, you know, and that's part of what I enjoyed about teaching, was helping students to develop their ideas and their stories and make them bigger than maybe what they thought they could be at the beginning.
Is it difficult not to be the teacher when you're looking at a friend's book to edit for them?
Sometimes, although, you know, I tend not to go into all of this, use a semicolon in this instance, not a comma, because, you know, that gets, I think, would get a little bit tiresome quite quickly.
Yeah, I suppose it could come across a bit nerdy, but also the fact that you're going to respect the fact that you're editing an author's book.
Absolutely.
And an established author.
Absolutely. And you know, so Christine has her style of writing, which is very different from my style of writing and from everybody else's style of writing. Everyone has their own voice.
Is that easy to get on with as an editor? Because for instance, so if I'm writing a song and I want someone to put their input in, with open mm-hmm, arms, mm-hmm. I take their input, but often I think that's not how I would do it.
Right. Yeah. And I try to do as little tinkering with the language as possible, because it is her book. It is, you know, the other person's book. I'm just there to, you know, maybe provide a little bit of feedback and another pair of eyes, so another perspective on things.
Yeah, and I guess putting some polish on the top.
Yes. So, yeah, we're kind of doing a mixture of things, to be quite honest, because I am giving her some feedback about the structure, the development, the kind of character development, which is something that developmental editor might do.
Yeah, sure.
But yes, I'm also wanting to kind of give her, you know, some good comments as far as the whole story altogether, which is what a beta reader is looking at.
Right. It must be difficult, because you're a creative person yourself and also an established author. It must be difficult to read somebody else's story as an editor and try not to influence the story.
Well, no, it's not as difficult as you might think, because it's not my story. You know, everybody has their own way of doing things, and that's, you know, I totally respect that.
Brilliant. Yeah, respect for the story and the author that you're working for, I guess, is paramount. So there's a couple of different types of editors we've talked about there. The developmental editor, type of editor that you're editing, that you're doing for Christine at the moment. Is there any other kind that we could talk about?
There's copy editors and line editors and proofreaders. And those people are looking at the kind of the polish on the
sure.
product, so
yeah.
They're checking things like consistency and continuity, and making sure that, you know, a character who had blue eyes at the beginning of the story doesn't wind up with brown eyes at the end of the story, and then, you know, all of the technical things about grammar, punctuation, spelling, typos, you know.
Yeah, indeed. And no matter how many times a book is edited, inevitably something will get through.
Well, yes. That's why I think traditional publishers, your work does go through half a dozen different levels of editing.
Yeah.
And that's something that costs money for, you know, for self-publishers. You know, so that's part of the reason that self-publishing authors need to be really careful, I guess, and choose editors wisely and use their colleagues. So, you know, beta readers generally are people that you know, are other writers that you know.
Indeed, and this is one of the joys of Portsmouth Authors Collective, where you all help each other and not necessarily charge for your services.
Well, that's right. And I would say to anyone, you know, beta readers shouldn't charge. It's a bit difficult if you don't know the beta readers, because, you know, it's a big ask to read and feedback on a whole novel. And, you know, so that's why I think it's just essential to have a writing community that you can go to and you know, read each other's novels and you know, do a swap, that sort of thing, so that it's not costing a lot
sure.
of money.
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely the joy of an organisation like Portsmouth Authors Collective and other organisations within the Portsmouth area. And indeed, across the nation, I'm discovering lots and lots of writing help.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you know, I'm always talking about the community of writers here in Portsmouth. But yes, you know, you go online and there are dozens of, writing groups that you can go to.
So you're at a stage with Christine Lawrence's book in the editing stage. From this point on, what would you say is the timeline before that book gets published?
I think Christine already has an idea when she wants it to be published, which I believe is sometime in the spring.
Oh wow!
So
cool.
You know. Hats off to her.
She's such a fired up human being, though, isn't she?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, she's
setting goals and achieving them.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. Okay, Pack, what's it been up to? What you got coming up?
Well, we've got our next Speak Volumes evening on the 22nd, on next Wednesday. And that's at the Hideaway Cafe on Highland Road. And we've got a number of people lined up to do readings to the group. And, you know, as I've said before, it's just a great way for us to get to know one another's books and a way of kind of practicing those reading and presentation skills as well.
Yeah, and as we've said before, it's additional to that. It's a bit of a social. You get to know each other, and that's how you do find someone's going to help you out.
Yeah, definitely. And then, of course, Bookfest is coming up as well.
Brilliant. Laurie, as ever, it's always wonderful to have you in and wonderful to learn stuff about, you know, about writers and all the processes that they have to go through. And I look forward to next week's Pack episode, which will be number 74.
Oh, gosh, we're getting close, aren't we, Bob?
We're waiting for that big 100, aren't we? And also, we'll soon be talking about the short story competition 2025.
Yes, that's coming up very soon, isn't it?
Indeed. Laurie, thank you again, and I'll see you next week.
All right, cheerio.
Take care.